Good afternoon. This is Lena Life. I'm Lena Mirmont. And this is certainly a very unusual show because we are going to have very medical and extremely relevant subject on the air. And the reason it is unusual because my guest, Dr. Ripich, made it extremely clear and made this wonderful bridge between specific, highly technical medical descriptions of the subject we're going to talk about, and yet very accessible to each of us, so we can take a full benefit of his very fundamental, extremely detailed book, which is about diabetes. And even though it is extremely serious, threatening disease, but there is a hope, there is a profound and a very promising approach, which Dr. Ripich will share with us. And I will say that it is very unique when actually medical description, as I mentioned before, will be so accessible. I found personally very inspiring. I just feel after I did get acquainted with his book, ready to go and ready to implement whatever was expressed in this book. I will make a little introduction so all of you will have at least a preliminary idea what we will be talking about in terms of diabetes. Not to scare, but being aware about diabetes and statistic, which is something one has to be aware, because indeed it's pandemic and we are in a situation when we almost don't have a choice but to be aware of this disease, to attend it, and to correct it. I would say that it is almost like psychological immune reaction we have, because so many people have diabetes and we almost take it as a cold. In fact, if we go to the doctor and they ask you to fill up the medical history, very many people will write diabetes, high blood pressure, and heart disease. As sound as it is perhaps common already, but tragically, it is not only it's not common, it's far from being common. In fact, it's developing in this global proportion. We have 30 million adults and children in United States, which might be affected in 16 years from now with this disease. We have tremendous amount of world population which affected by this. In fact, in the book of Dr. Ripich, I learned that international epidemic is just as horrendous as it is in our country. Personally, I was surprised learning that about 100 million of people in China affected by this disease, even though their dietary habits perhaps not as sugar oriented. And we certainly will talk about some diets and some glycemic indication for certain foods. But it is certainly extremely relevant and extremely urgent to understand the reality of this, because the economy we're living in, it is $174 billion just spent for the treatment of this disease. There are $58 billion vanished because people could not produce any longer because they became sick. And all these very precise numbers, very carefully described in doctor's book. And with all of this, no one can have any doubt that it is our personal responsibility to face this disease and not to depend upon general medical or government care, because there is no much of a solution there. So I certainly will restrict myself by going even going even deeper in Dr. Ripich's book, because the best way is to hear from himself. And I certainly will have privilege to ask him questions. And on this note, I wanted to thank you, Dr. Ripich, to join us and to show him just a little token of respect. I wanted to make sure that I will mention his very noble credentials, which are very rare because he has dual degrees from Case Western University as a nurse practitioner and clinical specialist in mental health nursing. Modestly, I will add from my own distant experience that a person who does know nursing in a connection with a mental intricate health issues are true specialists. Dr. Ripich, you are most welcome. How are you? And I guess my first question is, how can you help us to control first and then to reverse this deadly disease?
Well, thanks for having me. I'm so pleased to be here and privileged. Cornerstone of what happens in my clinic. You know, I'm a naturopathic doctor. I was a nurse practitioner for very long, and then I went back to a four-year accredited naturopathic medical school in Arizona. And our philosophy as naturopathic doctors is that your body has incredible power to heal itself if we just give it a chance, if we just give it the opportunity. And everything that I do is aimed at getting you into the best possible place for this healing power to work. Of course, I do talk about some dietary things, but mostly it's a total approach, a holistic approach, which involves diet, lifestyle, yoga, exercise, even talking about how to control your mood, and so on.
Now, I noticed that your book actually has a very solid, solid team of your colleagues, and I like particularly expression of one of your colleague, which says his name is Jim Healthy. He said that they found a way to get in touch with their warrior spirit, to dig deep and activate the willpower to fight the good fight and emerge victorious.
That's right. You know, you don't even have to take my word for it. If you go to the website, www.30, that's the number 30daydiabetescure.com, you can listen to my patients. You know, one of the things that happens when you go to the conventional doctor is that you sort of give over all of your control, and the doctor says, okay, well, do this, do this, do this. Well, if the doctor's main belief is that you need to be on medicine, then that's what you'll end up doing. But when you come to me, I say, well, it's not going to be easy. It will take focus. It will take dedication. But you can take charge here, and you can turn this around. And that's the difference. They do find that strength within them. And the other thing is the way that the book is structured makes it very easy. You know, if we could make a decision, snap our fingers, and we would change instantly, then everyone would keep their New Year's resolutions. But we know that that doesn't work. Most people don't even last one single month with that kind of resolution. So what I do is that every day, all you have to do is one thing. All you have to do is one thing. For example, on the first day, all you have to do is give up white sugar. I don't care if you want to have a steak for your supper. I don't care if you want to have a salad for your supper. Or I'm not going to have worries if you have ham and cheese for lunch. All you have to do on day one is eliminate white sugar. You can do that. And then keeping that on day two, all you have to do is add in half a teaspoon of cinnamon every day. You know, cinnamon is the most amazing spice. Well, there's all kinds of scientific proof of it, too. They gave some people cinnamon on top of their rice pudding, and some people they got just plain rice pudding. And the people who had the cinnamon on their rice pudding did not have a spike in their blood sugar. So all you have to do on day two is add in cinnamon from now on. And then keeping all of that, on day three, all you have to do is get rid of sugary beverages. No more soda pop, no more juice drinks or supercharged, you know, things in a can or any of that stuff. All you have to do that day is eliminate those sugary drinks. You can do all of this. And then keeping that on day four, for example, all you have to do is reintroduce healthy beverages, water, sparkling water with a slice of lemon, and so on. Inch by inch by inch, you make the changes that you need to do so that you can, at the end of 30 days, have the skills you need to really turn diabetes around.
I will make a little comment, perhaps a little creativity. I call it dance of tastes, because it's not a secret that we developed this sugar taste from our childhood. And of course, it's certainly very important for young parents, especially mothers, to introduce their young babies to a variety of tastes. So for us adults who already have formed habit and, of course, craving for multi-complexities because we're craving for it, my thought is, and I'd like to know your opinion on that, how about if we will experiment with a different taste, in fact, which we don't like so much, or we perhaps don't even know. It's not a secret that we like coffee. It is not sweet. It's quite bitter, but we like it. So if we will have, for example, the same coffee with a less and less sugar, or maybe even with a brown sugar instead of white sugar, or even better, with a touch of honey, would it be a little step forward, or maybe a little bit more gradual modification of white sugar and step into the improvement of our taste?
No, I feel strongly that is a bad idea. And you're going to say, what? But these things, brown sugar has more minerals and vitamins, the honey, we could sing all day long about the praise of honey, but here is the problem. You remember a long time ago, that man who was named Pavlov, who did the experimentation with the dogs, he would feed them and ring the bell, feed them and ring the bell, feed them and ring the bell, until he could ring the bell and the dogs would salivate, even though there was no food. What has he proved was that he can keep them salivating forever if he just intermittently reinforces them, like, oh, you know, he'll ring the bell four times, and on the fifth time, he'll give them food. Well, now he can ring the bell seven times, and on the eighth time, he can ring the food, but on the ninth time, he gives them the food, and he can go 10 times ringing the bell without any food. You see, this intermittent reinforcement is what causes the problem. We are, just as you said, we are conditioned to crave sugar. And my solution to the problem is that you must go for 2 weeks without it, and your palate will change. You will not believe how differently food tastes when you have eliminated sugars and sweeteners from your diet for just 2 weeks. You know, as adults, as diabetics especially, you can live through anything for 2 weeks. And at the end of 2 weeks, if you have stayed clean, of course I'm not going to say, oh, good, now you can go back to eating sugar. But you will be surprised. The craving is gone. And so I don't think that you should have a little brown sugar instead or honey instead. I think you have to go cold turkey for a while. And it has been proven time and time again, not by my saying so, but by my patients who have, you, when you go that long without sugar, 2 weeks, that's all you have to do. When you taste something, you won't believe how sweet it is. Now we eat the fruit and we think, oh, yeah, whatever. But then after we get away from that stuff, you won't believe it. You won't be able to drink orange juice anymore. It'll be sickening to you. It'll be so sweet.
Dr. Ripich, I will make a special effort to print a 2-week calendar, and I will create a 2-week clock starting that fantastic period of time. And that will be an indication and barometer of the finishing goal and race against sugar. For 2 weeks, you're absolutely correct. We can do it. I wanted to ask you, however, a little deeper question.
Yes.
I do have a friend, and certainly she will be acquainted with your book because it's so encouraging. In fact, you're giving 30 days of change of life. I don't know. One should be insane not to take advantage of it. So I will, again, ask for your opinion. What if one will have really difficult time to deal with these cravings, and everyone has its own different hormonal stage inside and different stage of diabetes? We hopefully will hear from you clarification between diabetes 1 and diabetes 2 and all this intricate behavior of insulin. And on this, I'd like to ask you, would you suggest to balance these 2 weeks and pay particular scrupulous attention to intake of a protein, lean protein, not fatty protein, not a steak, not a pork, but perhaps lean chicken or some other poultries, to balance and to subside the craving in a healthy way?
Yes, absolutely. And that's part of what I talk about in the book, is anchoring all of your meals with protein so that you have a slow release of energy and you have a sustained release without the highs and lows of the blood sugar. Also, not just protein, but whole grains are an important feature of the diet. So you'll go to eating healthy foods, including things like natural beans and lentils. You know, I think beans are the greatest nutritional source. There's all kinds of scientific evidence about how beans are effective in lowering cholesterol and so on. They're full of water-soluble fiber and insoluble fiber, and they're also demonstrated to keep your blood sugar down one full day after the whole day. It's called the second day effect. When you eat these sorts of things, you will feel full. You will feel satisfied. Your blood sugar will not be going up and down. So the cravings will be diminished and disappear.
I could not agree with you more. In fact, again, we can relate mostly to our personal life experience. And before I will express my next thought about the grain, interestingly enough, you just pinpoint beans. I have a friend from Brazil. Brazilians don't use sugar that much. They, in fact, just don't want it because their diet so filled with beans, and they are quite slender. So it is indeed incredibly beautiful food, so resourceful with so much of a variety, and you can prepare it in a very fast way, which I'm doing, but you can make some glamorous dishes as well. I like to add to this list a particular grain is buckwheat. I don't know if you will agree with me, but it is one of those grains which has a very good glycemic level, and it does satisfies you, and it brings a lot of wonderful energetic qualities.
Yes, I agree, and it tastes delicious too. At first, it takes a little getting used to because it is so natural. But by the third forkful or fourth forkful, it's delicious. It's perfectly fine.
You know, if you go to Russia, you will not have any problems. So baklava will be in every dish you order.
Yes, that's right. And they don't just cook it in water all the time. Sometimes you can cook it in some chicken broth or some other things, and it is delicious.
Absolutely. Can I ask you to go into a little deeper classification of diabetes 1 and diabetes 2? Your book is extremely carefully described the symptoms. It is very well defined in terms of medical progression between those two. And in my own right, I just wanted to say that it is extremely important to be screened carefully, which your book also talks about, because the symptoms are so widely ranged and they can suggest many disorders in the body. And sometimes even medical doctors will misdiagnose, and the worst of it, they will put you on the wrong medication. And I just wanted to make one comment that with your perception and knowledge of this disease, you pointed that gum disorders, that dental problems can be a problem with it because excessive sugar promotes excessive bacteria. And who would have think that tooth and inflammation around this tooth, what they call pockets, will be connected to such a major disease as diabetes?
Well, that's right. And it is, you know, the whole definition of type 1 and type 2 is very new. In my lifetime, we used to call it juvenile onset diabetes, and we used to call it adult onset diabetes. And here's how we used to describe it. Every cell in your body has two receptors on it. One is for insulin and one is for glucose, the sugar. When both of those receptors are stimulated simultaneously, the cell eats the sugar and spits out the insulin for recycling. In the case of a young person, they do not make insulin. Their pancreas has been attacked, and it does not make insulin. So the sugar binds, but the insulin doesn't. So no sugar goes into the cell and stays in the bloodstream. So for a type 1 diabetic, which we used to call juvenile onset, we give them insulin. Now, in the case of the type 2 diabetic, which used to be called adult onset, what happens is this. We eat so much sugar that the pancreas releases so much insulin that it's sugar, insulin, eat it, 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 until the cell is so overwhelmed with sugar that it can no longer absorb anymore. And it hides the insulin receptor. It takes it back in and puts it away. So all that's floating on the surface of the cell is the glucose molecule. So the sugar binds, but without the simultaneous stimulation of the insulin, the sugar does not go into the cell and goes back out into the bloodstream, and so you have high blood sugar. The problem is, if you can imagine, that such younger and younger and younger and younger people are being affected by this second type of diabetes. We are even seeing this in 7- and 8-year-olds, and we had to change the name. We could no longer call it adult onset. We had to call it type 1 and type 2. Type 1, you don't make insulin. Type 2, you do make insulin, but it just doesn't work anymore because your cell is so overwhelmed. The strategies for treating both of these things are in many ways exactly opposite. One is you give insulin, and the other is you try to do things to make the cell respond to the insulin or different things like that. There's a whole different set of things like that. The problem is that in type 1 diabetes, the medical community says, eat what you want and calculate your insulin needs based on what you are eating. They do not take into consideration how inflammatory insulin is itself. We do not want patients taking a great tsunami of insulin, but unfortunately, that's what they're taught. Calculate your carbohydrate intake, count your carbs, and then administer insulin to meet that. Well, when you go on the website, you will find a type 1 diabetic who was able to reduce his insulin needs by 80%. Can you imagine? He reduced his insulin needs by 80%. He will never completely go off of insulin, but he was able to make a big change based on changing his diet, his lifestyle, his way of moving through the world. Now, in type 2 diabetics, perhaps we don't necessarily... so far, I've been very lucky. Every single one of my patients has been able to go off of their medicines. But even if you never went off all of your medicines, you would still be able to get them reduced at least. But, you know, there's no reason to believe you couldn't have 100% success.
I just pick up on last thought you expressed about your patients. I need to say that overwhelming testimonials which you have in your book is speak for itself, because it is one thing to be very well equipped with knowledge, but it's another thing to deliver it to humans. You certainly did both so well. And there is no what I was particularly excited is the fact that there is no age limit at which you can start to follow your recommendations, that you can apply this to basically any level of this disease, either predisposition to it, or to full-blown diabetes. I like to ask you, are there any special recommendations would you have overall for people, let's say, after 60?
Well, I think that you don't need to think about any special recommendations for if you're older or younger. I think the most important thing is to realize that you have the power to do something at any age, and you have, there is nothing that is too small for you to do. There is no action which is so inconsequential that you might as well forget it. And it's never too late for you. You can always make improvements. If you're taking diabetes medicines, then you will probably need to get your physician in on the program with you so that you can get your medicines adjusted accordingly, adjusted downwards. And there are some other recommendations that I make, for example, about if you're taking diabetes medicines, you'll want to be careful about taking fish oil and things like that. But aside from that, there's not something that I would be concerned about. The only thing I would tell people who are over age 60 is to pay attention to bone loss and to do weight-bearing exercise to prevent that from happening.
I'm going to enter very sensitive territory, and that is traditional approach. I have to confess that when I was reading your description of traditional medical approach, and your very realistic, detailed characterization of how they're dealing with the disease, I had one question in mind, if you still have at least one friend in medical community, because your approach is so drastically different. It's not conflicting by all means, because you are for maximum resource of our own body. In fact, you're awakening our own body to the best of their abilities. But I wanted to ask you still, just picturizing the person who already affected by this disease, he comes to the doctor, he takes these prescriptions and he takes medications, he develops these very serious side effects, and then this person comes to you. You just touch upon the subject of reduction of the medication, and some people perhaps cannot get off them completely, but the reduction, I think, is a tremendous victory in itself. So how one who already has a full-blown disease comes to you, and how do you handle this?
Well, you know, people who come to me when they're already full-blown are coming to me because, frankly, they're just sick of it. They're sick of all the medicines. They're sick of all the finger sticks. They're sick of all the trouble they have to go through and so on. So they're actually highly motivated to get off of the medicine. The first thing I do is instill hope and encouragement that they can do it, and then I begin to teach them about the ways in which you should. Some of my approaches are pretty non-conventional. For example, I don't really put a lot of emphasis on finger sticks and monitoring your blood sugar on a daily basis if you are a type 2 diabetic. The type 1 diabetics will have to do some finger sticks, but the type 2 diabetics, well, I don't really put a lot of emphasis on that because there is never going to be a number that will show up on that meter where I say, oh, good, now you can eat whatever you want. So if the number comes back high, the sugar is high, we say get tighter on the diet. If the number comes back normal, I say get tighter on the diet. So since I'm not going to back off on my position, it's not as important to me what the finger stick says. And the same with weight. You know, people have had a terrible time in their relationship with the scale and the doctor's office and the enormous guilt that is laden upon them in a convention. Oh, my God, you haven't lost any weight. Oh, my God, you have. And they make the person feel so guilty and so bad that it's demoralizing. And you know what? It's the same story in my office with the finger sticks. There's never going to come a number on the scale where I say, okay, now you can eat what you want. So since I'm not going to change my mind about what the patient needs, it doesn't matter. And you know something? The weight will come off. It always has. The weight will come off on its own. You don't have to have that be a target. So we want health. We promote health. We talk about that, how to have your diet and that. And listen, you know, there are 30 days in the book, right? The 30-day diabetes cure. On day 1, you do this. On day 14, you do this. You know that of all the 30 days entirely, less than half of them have to do with what you put in your mouth. The majority of them have to do with how you live your life, how you walk through the world as a healthy human being. And so when they come to me, it's that sort of approach that people respond to. And, you know, I've had such good, it's such a blessing to be able to do this work. I count myself so honored to be here. And, of course, I do not take credit for any of this healing. I do not do it. The body does it. The body has the wisdom. But I've had such good luck with this program. That's why I wrote the book, is to get the word out to the people who couldn't come to see me, to get the word out and really change how we view diabetes in this society.
What a wonderful thought you just expressed, that body is doing this. However, yes, we give you tremendous credit because you open our eyes on our body. And I like to pick up on another thought which you just brought up. I personally will express my vision on this. It's a losing weight. It's countless multi-billion dollar industry which promotes this idea of losing weight. I wish it would be a little bit more of substantial recommendations how to lose it, besides those superficial cosmetic diets, which indeed only hurting us and making this weight to be more stubborn. In your book, you do describe this, and I certainly wanted to thank you because you describe this losing weight process as a consequence, as a reason for changing your internal and philosophical lifestyle. Losing weight is a result, but it is not the starting point. And many people, in fact, when they're going through different exercise, a tremendous amount of, I would say, almost suffering, don't really realizing that losing weight starts from what they put in their food. And this evolution starts from the plate, which is going to then reflect their changes on the scale.
Yes, although I hate to say it, I think that you don't need to teach a person who is overweight anything about how to lose weight. I think they have read every diet book in the world. I think they have read every menu plan in the universe. I think they know very well what it is that they need to be doing. But because of various reasons, they can't quite seem to do it. And that's what I approach differently in 30-day diabetes cure. I mean, you know, people who are overweight face ridicule in our society. They are practically invisible when it comes to going on a date or being attractive. It's hard for them, and they know it. But what they may not know is all of the things that are going on around them that trick them into eating too much. For example, I believe that as a society, we have lost our understanding of the difference between hunger and appetite. And this is one of the things I talk about in the book. Hunger is when you have gone without food for a long time. And appetite is what you get when you are driving in your car and you see a giant billboard for a greasy hamburger with bacon. And you think to yourself, that looks good. Or you see a billboard for a pizza or a ice cream or whatever, you know. And if you let appetite run your life, then you will keep eating. You will keep eating. And don't kid yourself. Those executives on Madison Avenue know exactly how to show you that picture and exactly where the picture should be on the bulletin board and everything. They've got it down to a science. We are barraged by messages, messages, messages. On the television, we see 8 messages an hour keep telling us to go eat. So there are a lot of factors involved with this, and this is why I talk about let's don't weigh you. We won't weigh you. We will focus on regaining your health and your sanity.
I will confess something to you. While I was reading your book, I had some thoughts, just an image, frankly, and then I was looking for someone who is poetically clear and will express my thought. And that was an image of a parachute. Surprisingly enough, I guess I had somewhat extra-dimensional communication with your thoughts. In fact, in your book, you are talking about realization of having a parachute, and you saying very beautifully, very clearly, you said, simply pull the ring. It would then provide you the floating very gently, and you even will enjoy the landing. And my thought was literally very much preceding yours, with another expression of Anthony D'Angelo, who said that your mind is like a parachute. It only works when it's open. And I feel that your book is certainly opening our minds to the best of our own self-help and self-control. I'd like to ask you a little bit more specific question regarding approaching our own body. We really have to be aware much more of our strengths and our weaknesses. Are there some points you can bring which this awareness can help us to deal with disease? Not only diabetes, but I would say in general. For example, if we have, if we inherited heart disease, and indeed you talk about this in your book, that you have to be very well self-aware, not only of your family history, but where you live in general, what are your roots. So, for example, if I have a heart disease and women have a lot of mitral valve prolapse, and let's say elderly men have prostate situation, how would you particularly address minerals and vitamins helping dealing with diabetes?
Well, the most important thing is to acknowledge that you have the possibility of healing that, and that it, just because you have a genetic tendency towards something doesn't mean that you necessarily have to have those genes expressed. So, for example, eliminating inflammatory things from your diet would be helpful for diabetes and heart disease. We know, for example, that there is a linear correlation between how much alcohol you drink and how much abdominal fat you get. So the more alcohol you drink, the bigger your belly gets. What's the big deal about that? Well, that's the most metabolically active fat in the body, and we know that it contributes to diabetes. But not just that. There's a linear correlation between alcohol consumption and prostate disease. The more alcohol you drink, the more your prostate will give you problems. So what you're touching upon is this idea that the 30-day diabetes cure is helpful for a lot of people besides just diabetics. We all need to recover this old-fashioned way of eating. You know, everything in our society is telling us go faster, go faster, go faster. But the truth of the matter is it's what's destroying us. I actually saw a commercial on television about how there was a new fast food meal that you could eat while you were in a taxi cab. And I thought, oh, my God, this is too much. The bottom line is you're going to have to change how you live your life, especially if you have these genetic tendencies. It's going to require that you go back to the old-fashioned way of planning what you're going to eat. You're going to have to go to the old-fashioned way of shopping. You're going to have to actually plan and shop. You're going to have to cook meals, and you're going to have to eat at home instead of going out to the restaurant all the time, going out for fast food. You're going to have to pack a lunch. All of these are very old-fashioned things that work well if we give them a chance. You may have a genetic predisposition for prostate cancer. That doesn't give you the right to resign yourself to it. You must fight against it.
And also, to add this is on the male part, I certainly wanted to applaud you for one fact in your book where you connect the diabetes with some ovary dysfunction, most vulnerable organ, which does connect to hormonal function in a woman's body. And you made this connection so clearly. So I like to connect to what you just said. In fact, our changes, as you pointed out, should come back to more of old-fashioned but more human approach. We should not buy so much of a frozen food and have our refrigerator freezer stock as if we're going for 2 or 3 months non-wild or non-fresh food. I believe that food should feel and look like wild, like from the earth, like we used to pick up strawberries and some other berries,
yes.
That we still have a smell of the earth.
Yes.
And unfortunately, you're absolutely correct. Life is so fast, and it is promoting this new form of civilization, which is fast, frozen, convenient to use to the moment, but so deadly in the long run.
Well, if you wonder how eccentric I am, let me tell you that I believe all of the vitality, all of the life force that is present in fresh food gets drained away. All of the nutrition starts to decline and so on in those frozen and processed foods. In India, they would say that the food has no prana. In China, they would say the food has no qi. We don't have a word for that here in this culture, but I'll tell you, all you have to do is look at the food and you can see. You want it as fresh and as freshly picked and as close to the earth as you can.
I like to go a little bit again to some details. We coming close to our wonderful program, but I just wanted to make a point that there is an obvious sugar, like you corrected me, that there is no really bargain there. There is no sugar, no sugar, whether it's a brown sugar or honey. There are some products which has hidden sugar. So we really need to pay attention to the ingredients. We have to be aware that milk also has sugar. We have to be aware that even the amount of fruits we are taking, especially in the first stage of trying to reverse diabetes, that even natural sugar can be somewhat sensitive to us and can trigger the craving. So can you
comment
about this hidden sugar and what we need to be cautious of?
Well, I'm going to try and keep this fast and simple, but it is like this. You have to be intelligent about what you are putting in your mouth. If you're going to get something out of a box, you had better understand every single thing that is in that food you're going to eat. The manufacturer will put on the front of the box, whoopee, whole grain. But when you turn it over, you will see, oh, look, whole grain is only 10% of the flour. The rest of it is refined white flour. You have to look and you have to read. And the same with that is the sugars. The sugars are hidden in the label. The worst of all of these is, in my opinion, high fructose corn syrup. There's plenty of evidence that high fructose corn syrup causes problems for people by increasing inflammation. But more importantly, there seems to be some scientific evidence that high fructose corn syrup turns off the message in our brain that says, I'm full. If you look at these people who go to the fast food and supersize everything, you think, my God, how can they eat that much? Oh, well, it's easy to understand when you see them drinking a high fructose corn syrup cola with their drink. The message in their brains that says, I'm full, has been turned off. So, of course, they're going to keep eating and keep eating and keep eating because of this high fructose corn syrup. I don't want to sound like I'm going off on a rant or I'm, too much, but listen, high fructose corn syrup is in about 60% of the foods we eat. It's even in ketchup. So you have to read the labels, make sure you understand what you're getting. And even if it's not high fructose corn syrup, there are sugary things that you will find on the shelves of the health food store. Don't be deceived because just because the sugar pop cereal is organic doesn't mean that it's not full of fruit juices and so on. Of the fruits, even there, Well, I teach you about this in the book. There are fruits that are very high in sugar. When you think about grapes, that sugar is in the juice, in the water. You take it and zoom, it goes right into your bloodstream. Whereas if you eat an apple, the sugar is bound to the fiber. You get less of a peak, and you don't want to be having sugar go up and down, up and down, up and down.
What a wonderful point. I'm terribly sorry I'm interrupting you, because I wanted to make this link. You made just such an important point that to drink apple juice and to chew an apple, totally different things. People give this apple juice to children, and they're not realizing that they give him or her just pure sugar, and all this hyperactivity, which we know, and some other side effects coming from that innocent glass of apple juice. So yeah. I'm so glad that you brought this quite a fundamental point of connecting the form of utilizing the food, where all the fibers and grains and sugar sort of speak mixed in a happy dance. And I believe that will be the most important point of prevention of this disease, because if people will indeed start to see what they eat, if they just will pay attention to the ingredients, if they will read your book, which I should have started in the beginning of my list, and started to, I would say, mentalize their awareness, then it will be the first most powerful step in the prevention of this disease. Your final thoughts, Dr. Ripich?
Well, listen, it's all very well and good to listen to me talking, but take it from my patients. You can make a difference. You can get better. Go listen to what they have to say at www.30diabetescure.com, and they'll convince you that you can turn this around. It's never too late. You can change your life for the better.
I thank you that you brought your website, because that was my very final suggestion. And could you kindly repeat again your contact, so whoever didn't have time to write this down certainly will have another opportunity. So please kindly repeat the name of your book and where they can find you.
The name of my book is 30 Day Diabetes Cure, and you can find the book at www.30diabetescure.com, or you can learn about me and my professional website and my practice and so on at www.theonemedicine.com. TheOneMedicine.com.
Dr. Ripich, not only from my mind, but from my heart, I wanted to thank you so much for being, number one, so courageous, and to be so honest, inventive, which is not very popular with the regular medicine, and so effective with your patients. Number two, I wanted also to thank you for the fact that you giving this tremendous optimistic hope. You give this optimism with real tools. You give a vision, and I do hope that with realization of this global problem, we will relate it to ourselves using your book, using this interview. And with this, I wish you the most of success and the most of the progress with your ideas and the lives which you saved.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
I will say goodbye to Dr. Ripich, and I will have a little continuation with the music, which will help us to reflect on our program. And then I will have some final thoughts after this composition, which is written by Julian Lampert, very talented composer, whose effort and time is pointed to our program. So this is his music, which he called Reflections. I'm still with you. This is Lena Life, a little tale of my program, which I hope was informative and certainly extremely relevant, as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, with Dr. Rupichi and his 30-day hope for someone who has diabetes and for everyone who wants to avoid this disease. I'd like to say a few words as a host who has truly privilege and joy to be on BBS, and especially when host becomes a listener, this is a double joy, and I certainly belong to this category. I need to say that BBS Radio is totally out of any limitations. The content of the programs are so interesting, so resourceful. And being a host, I feel almost addicted to the station. So if I'm not on the air, I'm with the air. And I wanted to thank them with my warm and special feeling, but also to be very thankful that they are brave to deal with so many different hosts. And amount of information, which is so wildly contrasting, sometimes conflicting to each other, but always keeps us with them, thinking, feeling, and enjoying their work, their effort. And on this note, I will say goodbye to my listeners. Open my next breath for next Tuesday, and wish that everyone who is as devoted to the station as I am will continue to enjoy their work and continue to enjoy their inspiration. On this note, that was Lena Life. Until very soon, I'm Lena Mirmont. Thank you for listening. Thank you.